All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. The first case to be heard this morning is number 2013-1432, Diley Ridge Medical Center and Canal Winchester MOB LLC versus Fairfield County Board of Revision. Arguing for the appellant, Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court this morning. I will not attempt to recite all the facts and law, which is already set forth in sufficient detail and well argued by my colleagues at my prior firm there. What I would like to do is highlight a few things for the court this morning and try and clarify any questions that the court may have with regard to this matter. Clearly the main issue, Your Honor, in this case is whether Canal Winchester MOB LLC is a person owning a taxable real property for purposes of 571519. Canal Winchester MOB LLC as a way of potentially a shorthand or nomenclature has been referred to as a ground lessee. And I think in this case, using the term lessee in ground lessee may have been somewhat confusing or misleading to the BTA, which raised the issue on its own accord. Do not want to insult the court's intelligence, but the ground lessee type of situation is sort of a hybrid situation where you don't have the same ownership as you would in either a lease situation or in a fee simple situation where somebody both owns the land and builds the building. The one situation I can think of, and I'm sure there are other situations, where the two components of your real estate, which are called out specifically in your real estate bill, that being the land and the improvements, are actually in different ownership. In the lease situation, which those are the type of cases, as the Master Commissioner is well aware, that the BTA relied upon, in the lease situation, you've got an individual who owns a piece of land and does wish to take the risk and make the investment and perhaps build the improvements and then enter into a legal instrument which grants a possessory interest.
Let me ask you, does the record unequivocally show that Canal Winchester MOB is the owner and holds legal title to the improvements?
I think the record, which was developed, obviously with in hindsight, would have been better developed, and we readily admit that, not knowing that the issue would be raised by the BTA at a later point in time. The record, though, even though it's not as clear as it could be, and frankly as clear as I'd like it to be to get this court to render an opinion about ground lessees for purposes of future cases, it does indicate sufficiently that I think Canal Winchester MOB LLC is the owner. Herman Ziegler, who is one of the financial personnel for the LLC, did testify, and when making reference to the pay applications, which were before the Board of Revision, did indicate that it was the owner. I believe he used that term.
What about the way this is recorded at the county? Is it all recorded as a single parcel, or is it split out, or?
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. If you looked at the record documents, the recorded documents, I think you would find in the recorder's office at least a memorandum of lease indicating this is a ground lease situation. But more importantly, where we are caught sometimes as taxpayers is the fact that we're sort of at the whim or at the mercy of the county auditor as to how the tax parcels are configured. If you think about it, the tax parcels in some counties may actually be separated so that for one, what would to the casual observer may appear to be one parcel of ground, i.e. a land with a parking lot and an office building, for instance, may at the county auditors be separated into three or four different tax parcels. A good example of that is the condominium example. There's multiple tax parcels. Here, I don't think the county, even though the recorded documents would have indicated that it was simply a ground lease and that the owner of the ground had no interest, merely entered into a lease of ground, had no interest whatsoever in the building, it was still one tax parcel with the land and the improvement component.
Were there two separate assessments or two separate tax bills, or was it all one tax bill?
I think it was two separate, but the reason for that was because there was a base parcel and a TIF parcel. There was an exemption parcel. I don't believe it was separated out for purposes of land versus improvements. And again, that's where the taxpayer, and we've argued this in the brief, provided the authority with respect to if there's ambiguity, the court should construe the ambiguity in the favor of the taxpayer to make sure that the taxpayer gets the opportunity to make sure that the value for that tax parcel is correct and that the appropriate amount of taxes are being paid. We're at the mercy of how the tax parcels are configured, and then further at the mercy of how the state may draft the form.
Well, and coming to the form, the complaint, obviously the complainant, and to some degree, is the master of the complaint. And in this case, the complaint does it not identifies Diley Ridge Medical Center as the owner of the property whose value is being contested.
I would argue, Your Honor, Mr. Master Commissioner, I would argue that, again, that somewhat becomes an outgrowth of how the tax parcel is configured. What else were we going to do? The tax parcel, if you pulled it up on the auditor's website, listed Diley Ridge Medical Center as the owner. It did not break out a separate tax parcel for our building, which in fact had a different owner. So as not, you know, we then are left trying to interpret how to apply this form, you know, DTE Form 1, to the tax parcels as configured by the county.
Well, let me ask you another question. Has Canal Winchester MOB, as the owner of the building, presumably, attempted to get the county to list it? I mean, some of the statutes talk about the person in whose name the property is listed or sought to be listed. Is Canal Winchester MOB an entity in whose name the property is sought to be listed here? Have they sought to have the county change the way that's?
I'm not sure that would be customary. If it would have, had we had foresight in how we were going to have to fill out a DTE Form 1, perhaps we would have. But each county.
So the answer to my question is no.
The answer at the time of this filing was no. I honestly can't answer whether today it's broken into a separate tax parcel. The answer is no. We frankly don't necessarily consider ourselves to be master of that ship as to how tax parcels are configured.
Well, then the other question is how this issue arose in the case, which you make a point of in the brief, mm-hmm. that this was simply sua sponte brought up by the BTA.
That's correct.
So So the record does not, as in its current configuration, unequivocally show the ownership that you're describing today.
That's correct.
But the relief that you're seeking would include possibly a remand so that evidence could be adduced?
We would certainly, at a minimum, seek a remand to the BTA. My research would indicate that it may need to state to the BTA that further evidence needs to be taken on this issue because it's not newly found evidence, I don't believe, and there are some restrictions on the type of evidence to be adduced at a BTA hearing. At a minimum, we would request that. We believe the record is sufficient to make a finding with respect to the tax value, given the evidence that was adduced, and given it's been a number of years with respect to this proceeding where we believed we submitted pretty compelling evidence. There wasn't much in terms of any evidence submitted by the county or appearance on behalf of the county at the BOR. There was somewhat of a one question deliberation with respect to that, and it was just simply punted and sent on to the BTA. We have yet to, you know, really resolve anything at the BTA. We're here trying to get what I perceive to be somewhat of a red herring cleared up. But we'll be back there. We do believe there's probably sufficient record for this court to make a finding with respect to the merits.
What about, obviously, there's the claim that Canal Winchester MOB is the owner of the improvements. Mm-hmm. Is there any claim that Canal Winchester MOB is the owner of other property in the county and could qualify under that provision?
No, not to my knowledge. I believe it's a special purpose entity that was formed for purposes of holding title to this building.
Does the record show whether there's a corporate affiliation relationship between the Daly entity and Canal Winchester MOB?
The record does not show it, and I would represent to this court that the Daly Ridge entity is a hospital. It's a Mount Carmel / Fairfield Medical entity. The Canal Winchester MOB LLC entity is a Daimler Group entity, so I don't believe there's any type of affiliation there.
There's also a reference to not only 5715.19, but 5715.13 in the briefs. And is there any particular argument that you're advancing about the interaction of those two provisions?
Well, obviously, this entity is adversely affected, and therefore 5715.13 could be interpreted to provide standing independently. I think we have focused our arguments on where we believe the BTA and the Supreme Court have really focused with respect to the standing issue, and that's 5715.19. And on that score, if I could elaborate, the Volibar case that is mentioned in our materials really did address the same type of situation. And obviously, the record could have been more developed with respect to this ground lease situation. But Volibar was a very similar case in that it was an office building that was owned by Volibar on ground that they had the possessory interest to pursuant to a ground lease. I believe that case, and the court may be interested in following through to its conclusion, was subject to motion for reconsideration because it would have been past the time period for that, but a second look after a particular ruling of the Supreme Court. They were asked whether their opinion that a ground lessee still had standing still held after this subsequent case of the Supreme Court, and the second opinion of Volibar even goes further to reiterate that, in fact, a ground lessee should have standing. There's a late 2013 case along the same lines. We didn't quote in our materials, but could make the court aware of it if they so chose. The problem is, apparently, given our case, our ruling in the BTA, and these other cases, rulings, including Volva Bar, there's some confusion at the BTA level, and so far as I can tell, there's no real ruling at the Supreme Court level to maybe settle this, not only for the BTA type of proceedings, but also for those of us out here who do have to take responsibility for filing valuation decrease complaints to make sure we understand what we need to represent in those complaints to make sure we're invoking the standing of the BOR and the BTA and the Supreme Court. It would be helpful if Form 1 were drafted a little more artfully, but that's not something we can do much about.
Thank you, Mr. Hollins. Mr. Dolan.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Jason Dolan. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney in Fairfield County, and I represent the appellees in this matter. From our perspective, the case really starts and ends with the very plain and direct language of 5715.19, which I'll refer to as point 19. The statute and the cases make very clear that in order to have standing, in order to file a valuation complaint, one must own taxable real property. I think the court's questioning about the record is quite important, because I think the record here does not show that that Canal MOB owned the property. One perhaps could draw inferences, but there's nothing in the record. That's a matter that could be easily, quite honest, could have been easily attended to at the BOR level. And
why wasn't that issue raised in opposition to the complaint, or why didn't the BOR initially make that a ruling on that basis?
I will say that in candor, the BOR missed it, and the BTA caught it. But in furtherance of that, though, should an objection have been raised? I suppose it could have or should have, but I don't believe it's required. And it's not required because, as the court is aware, the burden of proof from the long line of cases on this is on the appellant to prove jurisdiction, among other things. As prosecutors, we're acutely aware of that, and one of the things that we have to prove all the time, at least in criminal cases, is the jurisdiction of the event. No one is bound to remind us of that, and if we don't do that, well, shame on us, and we lose our case. And I submit to the court that in fact, is the same general standard here, which is to say that whether or not the objection is raised or not, this is a jurisdictional matter.
Although our cases tend to say that the burden arises to show jurisdiction when that jurisdiction has been challenged. And what we're saying in this case is that it wasn't challenged until the BTA sua sponte took a look at it and decided that this issue existed.
Well, yes. I mean, that is correct. It was not challenged ahead of time, but the BTA certainly had the authority sua sponte to raise it on its own as a jurisdictional matter. And there's Supreme Court cases that are cited in our brief that do get to that matter. I do want to address, Your Honor, a few of the questions that the court raised ahead of time. Regarding the tax bill, there is on the bill itself, there is a designation for land and buildings, but there is no separate bill sent for land and buildings. There is one bill sent out. In addition, I wanted to address the matter that was raised, where counsel raised the matter that we're, being Canal Winchester, at the mercy of the auditor. I submit to the court that that is not the case, and what typically happens, what often happens in matters of this type with sophisticated counsel as these two entities had, is that these tax matters are contemplated in advance, and an agreement is made either in the lease or some other document to allow Canal, in this case, to stand in or to have Daly Ridge lend its name and give the authority to do that. So those are matters that are frequently submitted as matters of contract and addressed in that manner. So
you're saying addressed through the filing with the auditor and the county recorder so that the record?
No, what I would say is that there would be, for example, an agreement could have been reached ahead of time between Daly Ridge and Canal that at Canal's request, Daly would challenge a tax valuation. That could have been arranged as a matter of contract, and oftentimes is. Or that Canal could act as the lawful agent of Daly Ridge in that matter. So they're really not at the behest. These matters can be addressed ahead of time and frequently are in agreements of this type. The second matter that I think is important to make clear is that on the record, and the BTA so found, that this matter was not filed filed on behalf of Daly Ridge. It was filed specifically by Canal on its own behalf, and there was a factual finding by the BTA on that, which I submit is an important matter for this court to consider. There is also no evidence in the record that Canal was the agent for Daly Ridge. There's none of that. These are matters, again, which could have easily been put in had they been there. Now, counsel raised the question about being surprised by the BTA decision and not having an opportunity to respond or to clarify. There is, under the BTA's rules, authorization under BTA Rule of Practice 12 for reconsideration, not just for a clerical cure, as was mentioned in the reply brief, but actually for a reconsideration. I can represent to the court, I've checked that, and there was no motion for reconsideration filed with the BTA in this matter. So that was an opportunity that, for reasons that we don't know, the appellant did not take in this matter. They could have sought to re-argue.
Of course, they probably would have had to pursue the appeal immediately anyway.
That's correct. Yeah. It does not expand the time, but it is one that they could have filed there.
Is there a concern here let's call it due process on the part of Canal having the opportunity to show its standing as owner of the improvement or not? Shouldn't they have the opportunity to do that? And if not, why not?
I think they did have the opportunity. First of all, they could have moved for reconsideration. All right. Okay. And I suspect that had they done that, the BTA may well have granted that. The other thing, though, is that, I get back to the burden of proof. It's well known under society and a whole series of other cases that the burden of proof on jurisdictional matters lies with them. This is not a surprise. This is well-established law, it seems to me that it is appropriate that burden rests with them as it would rest with a criminal prosecutor or any other party.
What about the significance of the way they filled out the complaint?
I think that the complaint is a matter that often not considered about the complaint is that there is, in fact, a box on the bottom now in Section 9, and it was partially filled out here. Now, it doesn't get specifically to the matter that was addressed Here, it talks about the requested change in value is justified for the following reasons. And there's a fill-in box. And in fact, in this case, there was information filled in. That is something that is sometimes used to put, I'll call it one-off information in the complaint. The other thing, Your Honor, is so I do think that there's an opportunity in the complaint to raise those issues. Less than perfect, granted, but I do think there's an opportunity for that. The other thing is that the complaint is more than that. It's a sworn statement. And in this case, Mr. Burkholder, the attorney for Canal, swore on line 2 and on line 5 that they were not the owner. Line 2 of the complaint says, complaint if not owner. I don't think Mr. Burkholder was misleading. I think he was telling the truth. The complainant is not the owner, and he said it in his complaint. If he'd had objections with it or problems with it, or if they'd had an arrangement with Dialy Ridge, he could have put Dialy Ridge and represented Dialy Ridge, but that wasn't done here. And I think that's an important consideration. I want to talk a little bit about Volabar that's mentioned. As Mr. Hollins mentioned, the position in Volabar has never been adopted by this court. I do think what's important and what is significantly different from Volabar and Midland Foods, the other case that was cited, from this case is the fact that in each of those cases, the BTA made a fact finding that the buildings were owned by the entity in question. That is not the case here. The record here is quite, I'll be generous and say murky or unclear. Could one stretch and find it? Perhaps. Is there clear evidence that Canal owned that building? Absolutely not. And that's a matter that could have easily been addressed and resolved. I think that, finally, I do want to address the court's question regarding 5715.13, and I do think that this court's case in Village Condominiums addresses that. It had been argued, I think, in the reply brief that 5715.13 expands. Well, in fact, Village Condominiums makes clear, I think, that just the reverse is the case here. Based upon all of that, Your Honor, it's the position of the appellees that the Board of Tax Appeals got this right, that its decision should be affirmed, and we urge the court to affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dolan. Mr. Holland, you've reserved 5 seconds, but you may take a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And the only thing I really want to touch upon is on the contractual issues. There are reasons probably in that contract, i.e., if Canal Winchester MOB LLC agreed to pay taxes, there are reasons that you wouldn't have split this into two tax parcels. You probably had one tax bill coming and they would have been responsible for those. So there's a mix of issues as to whether you'd ever request, from a commercial standpoint, ever request a separate tax bill. And I don't disagree with counsel about the fact that there may have been provisions in there allowing them to be the agent for purposes of valuation complaints for Dialy Ridge Medical Center. Again, without the opportunity, though, to develop that record, we don't know. I'd love the opportunity to be able to do that, which may even clear up this issue and make standing even clearer. And I thank the court for your time and attention with regard to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Hollins. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.